Welcome back. My name is Omar. And this fine gentleman.
This fine gentleman next to me is Juan.
And we're back at it again with another great episode. And we have another special guest today, Mr. Kevin DeLeon. Let's give a round of applause for Mr. Kevin.
Yep. I'm holding my mic, so I can't really clap, but I'll do the little, what they used to do, the fingers or
snapping.
Good job.
Like we're at one of those like little nightclubs or whatever, or like little bars or whatever, you know.
Yep. Mm-hmm. Kevin, thank you for being on here. What's up?
What's up, man? Everything's good.
So for those of you that don't know, Kevin, I met him in college back in undergrad at UC Merced. Been pretty close friends since then. And my real question, Kevin, is do you know how to make meth?
No, I do not. Putting that out there in the public, I do not know. And I have never tried.
Officially.
I'm sorry. That had to be my first question because Kevin got his bachelor's. Was it in chemistry or some specific chemistry? Or
just
chemistry?
Yeah, biochemistry.
Yeah, I forgot about that. Mm-hmm. And now he has a job. What's your official title, if you can share that?
I'm an analytical chemist.
Yeah, analytical chemist, which I think is so pretty.
No biochemistry
pretty cool.
at all.
No biochemistry. So you just left that in the dust.
I left that in the dust, man. It's just we need to get a job out there.
Yeah. And that was a question that I've asked Kevin previously before. I've always, you know, because we all watched Breaking Bad, so I was always like, I wonder if you can actually make meth when you get really good at chemistry. Because I know when I was taking chemistry my first year, I was like, just like slipping through the book. Like, so when do you teach us how to make meth? Like, when does this happen? I'm not saying I wanted to make it.
Reactions and then you'll make it.
I'm not saying I wanted to make it or consume it. I'm just saying, you know, the ability is pretty cool.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're definitely trying to advocate for drug use on this podcast.
Great. I ended up on the wrong side of the internet.
It's like, I don't think I want to do this podcast anymore. Yeah, I'm kind of scared.
Trying to keep my life. The whole American Chemical Society didn't come after me now. Fire me.
That's actually really funny, though, because like, I think everybody just about became like that when they're watching Breaking Bad. It's like you would hear about anybody that even knew like a little bit of like science or whatever. You're like, science, you said. You know, everybody's like over here trying to connect the dots. Like, I could make pink meth. You know, I could do it. Like, we could really do it, man. But
I wonder if I go back and look at the show about. Because I don't remember the show much. It's been forever since I watched it. So
honestly,
I wonder if there's any technicality in it and just judge if it's right or wrong.
Oh, good point.
Apparently his meth was so pure that it became blue. I don't know if that's an actual reaction that you're aware of, but like general meth seems to be...
I'm not aware of that.
I'm not saying the meth, but I'm just saying like general meth is like crystal whatever color. But in the show, he's like... I mean, you know, right? He's like a high school chemistry teacher, so he's super good. And he got his to like 99 or 90 something percent purity level, which apparently triggered like it to turn blue. How easy is that?
What I remember is that he was more than a high school teacher, right? He was like a pretty gifted chemist.
Yeah, for sure.
But he got screwed over or something like that.
Yeah, he was going to start a company with one of his friends, got screwed over. Mm-hmm. Yep. So how... Actually, like from a science perspective, just real quick, how difficult is it to get something like to a 99 or 90% purity level?
I bet it's pretty difficult. I mean, I'm not an organic chemist, right? So I don't do any of that. But it depends on the synthesis route that you take that it may cause a difficulty. Mm-hmm. But at my job, we have some synthetic chemists that they make standards. And their stuff is like 99% pure all the time. I think one of my coworkers he has practiced with organic chemistry quite a lot, but when he did a reaction, he got like 70%, I believe, as opposed to like these other guys that do it as their job. They always get 99% pure.
That's pretty crazy.
I believe it takes quite a lot of practice.
So with you being like an analytical chemist, what is that? What do you do then?
Pretty much I measure like the purities or like AI in samples. So what's they give me AIs? Something, active ingredients. Okay. So like, let's say they give me like a vial of like liquid, and they say how much of an acetate is in here or like alcohol is in here. So I prepare the sample and I run it through an analytical instrument, and then I tell them this is how much is there.
Nice. That's pretty interesting.
Yeah.
So throughout the explanation, I didn't hear you say anything about meth. I'm kind of confused.
Yeah, I'm kind of confused.
That you were a meth chemist. I don't do any of that.
Come on, man.
Keep bringing it back to meth the whole episode.
Whole podcast. Yeah. Kevin Meth De Leon.
Imagine that shit. That'll be clickbait for sure.
Yeah. It's like on the cover that I like designed for this episode or whatever. Like, I'm literally gonna put a big pile of meth in there. Like right
my hair so I have make me bald and be a gold teeth.
Yeah, you have the glasses too. Okay. Get to hilarious. Work, Omar.
We have a lot of work to do. We need to start easy.
Right.
No, that's really cool. I personally know absolutely nothing about what you do. So, I mean, what can you tell us? Like, how was the beginning for you? Like, where did it all start? What was something that, I guess, piqued your interest or led you to say, hey, this is something that I want to involve myself with?
So I guess I just went back to my high school chemistry teacher. It was pretty much the only... Well, one of the only two classes that I learned stuff in my whole high school, because it wasn't, I think the teaching wasn't so well there. And it felt like they didn't really care.
Public school?
Public school. LAU is the public school.
Oh, some of the finest educational system out there.
The finest educational system all of America.
Yeah.
And I could say all of the whole world, you know?
I think you could, yeah.
Yeah. But my chemistry teacher was pretty good at teaching, and he was, you could see that he was interested in teaching the subject to the students. And so that's why I started enjoying chemistry. I went to UC Merced as a CSD major, but that was pretty boring. I did not enjoy it at all.
Mm.
And when I dropped out of it, I was looking for what to do. And I was like, wait, I liked chemistry back in high school. Let me try that out. And then after that, it's just 4 years of suffering.
And that, gentlemen,
because all chemistry is not general chemistry, man. Once you get past general chemistry, when you get to organic chemistry, oh my god,
wow,
such a tough subject to learn.
See, that's how you make a man. You go from something boring to just absolutely like devastating, like this is just terrible. That's what makes a man right there.
For real.
Build character, right?
Right.
Interesting. True. Okay, so I'm kind of curious, like, so like you mentioned, you are from LA. It's fascinating to me, like, how many times within like pop culture you'll hear about like LA, you know, like say like right now we're joking about the educational system, right? But it's like something that's kind of like commonly known that it's not quite up to par, you know, with, I guess, other public school systems or certain things that I guess contribute to the general culture there in LA. Come from people just not having the best means to a good, you know, educational system. Like there's like that one movie, Stand and Deliver. That's literally just based on that, right?
Over there in East LA.
Yeah, exactly. In East Los, right? Yeah. And like there's a whole like cholo vibe to it and like just people that are like very broke and stuff, right? It's an iconic movie though. And
yeah.
So for me, I'm kind of curious to ask you, like, what exactly did that look for you? Like in the beginning of your, I guess, educational career, you know, before you got to college, before maybe even high school, did you already have that in mind? It's like, this isn't quite looking so good for me out here.
Not really, because it was just normal for me, you know, just go to school, do a worksheet, never take an exam, that kind of stuff. It's not until college where it just like all hit me. Everyone was studying for a midterm. I was like, what's a midterm? And
okay. Yeah,
it was such a huge shock for me. It's very different because back in high school, they'll just give you worksheets and then, you know, people even search them up like on Quizlet or something.
Yeah.
And teachers wouldn't care. So, it was very difficult to get used to college.
Yeah. That's something that people don't talk about maybe because like it happens the first year and then you kind of just forget about it. But I remember exactly the same thing. And I mean, I went to the same like high school as you did, Omar.
Oh, you did?
And it was what? All right. Yeah. Oh, surprise. Surprise, surprise. Boom.
Yeah.
It was all right. I don't know. I don't really know like where it stands in terms of like if it was good or if it was bad. Mm-hmm. I thought it was all right. But just to say that like when I went to college, it was still like, I was still super shocked because in high school, I mean, I tried in high school for sure, but I've never once studied for a test. I'd never mm-hmm. in high school studied for any test. And that doesn't make me like super smart. Like everyone that was in college that I asked did the same thing. Like no one had studied for like tests in high school, whether it was, you know, like Kevin getting a worksheet with pretty much the answers from Quizlet or just genuinely not needing to study because you could just show up and like get an A or get a B or something like that. And it was the weirdest thing in the world where I was like going to the library, literally like my first week, I was like, why is everyone like sitting down and reading? Why is everyone like on their computers? And it's like, okay, I get it. It's a library, but on a real sense, I thought I was like, I feel like you guys are all like faking and just, you know, pretending like you're really getting work. And then I was like, huh. Then I went to my first test. I think it was a calc test I took and I didn't fail it, but I think I got like a C and I had taken the early version of calculus in high school. I didn't pass it, but I didn't pass the AP test actually.
Yeah.
But I took the class, the A portion of it. And then I got like a C in it and I was like, oh, that's not supposed to happen. Like I've literally seen all of this stuff before. And exactly the same way, I was just like, wow, I need to study now. It sucks.
Yeah.
Can I go back now?
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, I've talked about it openly on this podcast too, that like I wasn't like quite the best student. I wasn't necessarily motivated or inspired. I did take some classes with Juan and other classes that were just on the, I don't know, just very boring, I guess, to me. But like, yeah, same thing though. Throughout my whole time there at school, like no studying, no even like reviewing my notes, right? I think Juan would remember most times I would literally be reading the book during lunch, right before class, you know, right before we'd have a test or something. Like it's just doing the absolute bare minimum to get by, right? But as we're mentioning, once you get that kind of, I guess, in your mind, you know, like, oh, I really don't have to try that hard. Like I can really just get by doing the bare minimum. It's like you're setting yourself up for failure because the second that you have to make that leap into college, it's like, oh, surprise, like you're not going to get by doing that, right? And it really does force you to, I guess, step up your game, which is something that I had a really difficult time doing. And ultimately, I just wasn't really able to commit to. So respect to you guys.
Same here. I mean, I still had a difficult time for that, too. In my general ed classes or just general chemistry courses and undergrad, I still did that. I wouldn't really study much. And I would get exam grades like either average or just slightly above average. And I thought that was fine, right? But then it just came into the upper divisions where I just got totally destroyed. Like organic chemistry, I ended my life.
Yeah. You don't know that. You don't know that, Omar, but like, I mean, I was a math major, right? But everyone in college knows about organic chemistry. Even if you're not a chemistry major, because because everyone fucking complains about organic chemistry and how hard it is and how difficult it is. My sister, right, she did biology. Now she's doing like nursing and stuff, so medical stuff. But she took O-Chem. Mm-hmm. And to this day, she's like, that's the only class I've ever gotten like a C in. And I was like,
yeah, you know, it's one, a tough class. I feel like
you're a nerd. But two, this must be pretty hard.
I feel like it's just people don't study it correctly because, for example, before this, you take like, for example, the people who study bio, the way they learn to study is to memorize things. In organic chemistry, if you try to memorize things, you're not going to get anything right because you have to study it like if you're studying math because when you do your arrow pushing or reactions, it depends on what you're given to make that reaction. It gives you a different outcome.
Mm-hmm. So, 100%. That's another thing. Biology students always had the reputation, not a bad reputation, just like they memorize things. because
oh yeah,
there's, I wouldn't say there's no other choice, but they, their material and like courses are super compact with things. I mean, everything about the cell. And then if you're going into, you know, a pre-med, everything about bones and all this sort of stuff. Like my sister was telling me they have to memorize like all bones, and we have like a shit ton of bones. There's no way of like some way of like, you know, like you have to remember every single one, but
yeah,
definitely, you know, something that I think everyone sort of like, everyone trolled each other in college of like, you're that major, you're that other major. Oh, that's yeah. Why I told you, Omar, like when you would go to parties or anything, first thing they would be like, hey, so, you know, oh, hey, I'm Juan or whatever. I was like, oh, what's your major? Mm-hmm. First question, you know,
right.
Yeah, like, oh, you're a psychologist. Oh, okay. You're a sociologist. Oh, okay, cool. So you don't know what struggle is. Okay, cool. Let me move on.
You know, it's funny because one of my housemates was a psych major.
Yeah.
And he came in one day complaining, like, I took the most difficult exam ever, and it was such a horrible exam. And it got graded, and he said, can you believe it? The average was a 72. And I was like, dude, what?
Jesus Christ. 72. That is so good.
Like, that's insane, because you have this whole other world that averages are 30, you know?
Facts. Literally. Damn. Physics, yeah. Math, chemistry.
Mm-hmm.
I can 100% talk about physics and math. They were like anywhere between 30 and 50.
Mm-hmm. That's crazy.
That means like all of the, that means they were all wrong, you know? And I know what you're thinking, Omar, like, damn, like, why don't they make them easier? And we thought the exact same thing. Like, why don't you just make it easier? More people get answers and you still fail somewhat, but they literally, at least at the beginning, they want to, specifically, they tell you they want to weed people out of the majors, the weak people, that quote unquote.
25 midterm one.
Yep. 100%. Yeah. Literally. It was like, it specifically made it clear that there are people here that should not be here. And we're going to do everything possible to get them out. And then once you get past that, and once I think I got past my second or third year, then that sort of stopped. I mean, the averages were still super low, but they weren't trying to make you fail. You know, they were just like, all right,
you're cool. Failing so on your own.
They're like, all right, so like, you guys actually
once you
survived.
Get to your upper division, you know, once you get to your upper division courses, you have like the more serious students in that major, you know?
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
So that also was back.
Yeah.
That's hilarious to me, because I remember like back in high school, like if the majority of the class failed a test, that was on the teacher. And like, you know, it would happen here and there, and the teacher would be like freaking out. They're like, okay, we need to do some reviewing. We're not going to be adding this grade to the final books or whatever, you know? And like, they would like be freaking out. They're like, oh, damn it. Like, I didn't do my job. Right. But like college is like, oh, you failed? Like, yeah, okay, good, all right.
Okay, it's definitely moving on. Different. Especially if you're a tenured professor, they don't give a crap.
You can't be fired. Literally.
That's so crazy.
Most professors don't get fired, and tenured professors literally cannot get fired. That's why, like, they, I don't know, really celebrate that, because they're literally unfireable. So they can be trash teachers, they're not going to get fired.
I wonder if they even check, like, the surveys that professor and stuff like that. They probably don't, right? Once you're a tenured professor, you
probably not. And at the end of every semester, you would, at least at USIP, said we would rate our professors and talk about them and, you know, review sort of stuff. And most people wouldn't fill them out for the same reason. Like, you're not going to affect them. You know what I mean? Like, some new professors, some new professors, maybe you might be able to because they're new, but most professors, not. But to be fair, like, I always filled them in. Most of the time, I always roasted professors. I'm just going to say that.
Oh, yeah?
Because they were always, it's just like, dude, why are you doing this way? Like, I don't know. Maybe that's just me.
You roasted our 125 professor?
120. Oh, no, except for him. He was the shit. It's a guy who had just graduated.
Yeah, it was cool.
Yeah. He was a really new teacher.
I'm going to get my charger for this laptop.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, yeah, that's a whole other world that I'm not really familiar with, like college and all that. But the fact that people could literally be complaining about the professor and it would not make a single dent into their career, just them even their teaching style, like, that's kind of hilarious to me. I mean, that's really when you're getting to different levels in life, because I think there's people that grow up in a certain way where it's like, they have very high expectations of like how they're treated in their everyday life, right? Either because they're spoiled, or they're just, you know, come from a different kind of world that most people just don't really understand, where it's like you'll see somebody at Starbucks flipping out because they didn't get a certain ingredient right in their coffee or whatever. And like they might want to throw it at someone, right? It's like those kind of people now being put into that kind of an atmosphere. It's like, oh, like you think you have power? Like you think your judgment is going to affect anybody here? Like, please take a seat. Like, you're not doing anything.
Yeah. There's actually a meme about the tenure professors. I think it's a, what's that movie, Saving Private Ryan?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a scene. I forgot the actor's name. Was it Tom Hanks, right?
Tom Hanks, yeah.
Yeah, Tom Hanks. I think it's the scene where he has like a pistol and he's shooting it. Mm-hmm. And then it cuts to the next scene where it's like a tank in front of him. Yeah. And then the student surveys, and then the tank is the tenured professor. Nothing's going to harm him.
You cannot take them down. It's just might as well not. Yeah. Let me ask you actually a question, because I was thinking about that as well. You know, the 30% averages, the 40% averages in class, professors legitimately like walking in there and being like almost roasting the class, you know, like, this is one of the worst classes I've ever had, or this thing, that thing, right?
Oh, man.
has that to you sort of like strengthen, in a sense, your, how should I put it? Your ability to take criticism, your ability to take failure, right? Because for me, I've noticed that a lot of things, obviously after college, have happened where I'm like, oh, I failed here, I failed there, like I fucked up here, fucked up there. But at least from college, like it almost doesn't bother me anymore, because you can't let it bother you in class, in college, not just because you have other classes, but because just within that single class, you fail one day and you have an assignment due that day or 2 days after, where it's like there is zero time to mope around, there's zero time to cry, there's zero time to be like, oh no, like the sky is falling, because literally if you do that, you will fail, because the next assignment's coming,
like,
the next assignment, the next midterm, right? The final, and then the class is over and you're like, what just happened?
Yeah, man, like I remember one time I had 3 finals in one day.
Yep.
That was terrible. I think the first final I took was like bio class, and I felt like I didn't do any, like, well at all, but I just couldn't think of that at all for my next 2 exams, because I probably would have messed it up.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
But yeah, you gotta pick up, stand up real quick.
Yep. Sure.
Wow. Yeah, I'm not really familiar with that, but I can only imagine how stressful that must be, like taking an L at the beginning of the day, but it's like you got to wipe that off because you still got a few more L's to take that day, right?
I like that. Or yeah, it's like you did go to college, bro. Exactly.
Exactly. It. I've failed miserably in other aspects of my life. So that's where I can make the connection.
Failure is failure.
You grow thick skin when you're in college.
Yeah. For sure. Honestly, it is funny though. Like, when you meet people, like, because through work, I had a lot of clients that were much, much older than me, and I could definitely tell which percentage of my clients had actually gone to some sort of a 4-year schooling system after, you know, high school, or some sort of graduate school or whatever, or just nothing, like just went straight into the workforce. I could tell right away, like there was no doubt in my mind. I'm not sure that would still apply to the younger people now, but it was hilarious to me. I'm like, oh, I know exactly who went to college, because it's like they just carry themselves differently. And it's because of what you're saying. It's like they grew thicker skin. It's like if something were to go wrong and I would present them with a problem and be like, okay, well, how can we figure this out? You know, like what steps can we take to take care of the situation? And then some of the clients that I had that didn't, it's like it all hell broke loose. It's like, oh no, like this is the end of the world. And I'm just like, whoa, relax. Like, relax. We'll figure this out. It's all right. And that's like hilarious to me, because I mean, how much more difficult can you get, right? Especially like right after high school, a lot of kids are still kind of, I guess, trying to understand themselves, like learn as to what life is even, you know, like what they want to do in life. And all of a sudden you're just thrown into this other world. It's like, well, while you're trying to figure yourself out, while you're trying to maybe date someone or maybe, you know, figure out what you want to do for the rest of your life, let's also plant you in this place where it's like you're forced to try to, you know, really excel at stuff that you probably know absolutely nothing about, but you're expected to, right? Whether it's through memory retention, right? Like you're trying to retain all this information and memorize things. Or just, I don't even know. Like, again, I have no experience. I wouldn't even know. But it's like, it's a whole nother level, right? It's not easy. I remember the stories from when, like, Juan would tell me sometimes. And I'd just be kind of, like, in my room, like, so thankful that I didn't have to go through that. You know, like, that's terrible, man. Like, why would you do that to yourself? But
it's a very good question. I agree.
Yeah.
That's one of the things that I always argued of, like, people complain about school, like, right? The main one is like, oh, they don't teach us about taxes. Like, all right, I get it. You know, taxes are kind of important. Also, there's these things called TurboTax and Intuit and HR. Like, literally, like, you can learn how to do taxes. That's not a difficult thing. The thing that always bothered me was, like, people would be like, well, college or school doesn't work for this case or that case. Like, I can't talk about, like, middle school and high school, but college works for that specific reason. You grow thicker skin. You learn how to problem solve, which everyone thinks you're like born knowing how to solve a problem. That's like not true at all. That's the number one thing I learned in college. How do I even approach a problem? And I don't think that was specifically because I was a math major. I think most people in college just learn that, like, okay, here is a problem. Not just like in college, not just like classes, but like, you know, everyone from my house is moving out and I have to find a new place. That is a problem. How do I find another place so I'm not homeless next year? How do I apply for financial aid? How do I, you know, submit a useless review to a professor? Like, you have to figure out how to do all of these specific things. And like you said, your parents aren't around for most cases. So you have to learn all of it by yourself.
Yeah, I remember on campus, I saw quite a lot of students washing their clothes for the first time.
Yeah, exactly. You laugh, but yeah, all those sort of things. Yeah.
Damn, that's crazy. Yeah, that's something else. I honestly wish I had experienced that a little bit more. I mean, I went to a junior college, right? But that's essentially no disrespect by saying this, but that's essentially like just a continued high school. It's not really anything, I guess, crazy there. You could literally go to the JC and not have a college experience, because I think it's still a step below that. I mean, it technically is, but it'll never be the actual full experience. But I do wish I had went through that just to see what it would be like. Obviously, I say that now that I'm more like mentally prepared and aware of myself. At the time, though, had I actually gone to college, I would have completely just broken down. I mean, there's no way I would have excelled in that kind of an atmosphere.
You would have been like Kevin his first year.
What the?
Kevin, just partying it up. Kevin partied it up his whole first year.
You didn't even know me first year.
I know, but you told me. So,
nice.
I think that was my second year when I went to a few like kickbacks from my friends. Second and third year.
Oh, never mind. Actually, you know what? Never mind. Because my roommate, who's also named Kevin, he was the one that did it. So our first year.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that's what I was like, what?
Yeah, yeah, my bad. I'm confusing Kevin with Kevin. You know.
I was just stuck in my dorm my first year.
Cut me some slack, people. It's Kevin and Kevin. he would party a bunch. And I think he actually got, like, kicked out or something along the lines. And then he came back. Really good redemption story. That guy's doing his PhD now. Like, so, like, damn. Yeah, he actually at UC Merced. Yeah. That, I honestly... And I told him, he agreed.
I met him.
Yeah, you met him. He's pretty cool.
Yeah, he was in that research program with you, right?
Yeah, he was in that research program, MACES, funded by NASA. Yeah, shout out NASA. Yeah. And honestly, like, again, if you guys like ever meet him and we talk about him, I'll see if I can hit him up. He will agree, like, there's no chance I should not be here. Like, I should 100% like be somewhere else. I think he failed out. And then he had to apply to, you know, be put back in, because he essentially failed out from like bad grades and not showing up ever to class. So I think they kicked him out for like a semester or something. I don't know. I lost contact with him because I mean, I was in my own sort of things, you know, trying to find myself out. I wasn't really, you know, like keeping up with him or staying in contact with him. Mm. And then I saw him again. I was like, oh, what's up? Expecting to see the same person. I was really, really shook. That was like one of the first times I've seen someone change that drastically, where he was like focused, like laser focused. And then, you know, again, when we graduated, he's like, yeah, I'm going to do my PhD. I'm like, wow, like I would have never imagined this. And he started laughing. I was like, yep, me neither. So little redemption awesome. Story there. Yeah. Other Kevin.
Now that you mentioned that, Juan, I kind of want to ask you, Kevin, did you ever go through something like that? Not necessarily specific to college or to education, but like, I guess in any aspect of your life where it's like you've gone through some sort of hardship that you faced that was like life changing or that just really forced you to kind of step it up a notch, like put it into higher gear.
To be honest, though, I'm good at everything.
Oh, okay. 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 I like that energy.
No, it was pretty difficult right after college getting over to the real world and working in the industry. First off, it's just getting yourself to learn everything in the company that you work for and what you do there. Because, you know, undergrad is, they teach you all these different subjects, but they don't specifically teach you, you know, how to apply this to this job.
Mm.
So everything you've like learned in college, you just have to start applying that to your job. And that was pretty hard to get used to. I worked like in an environmental lab after college. Mm-hmm. And it's just analytical, and I had almost zero analytical experience because first off, I didn't really pay attention to that class. That was boring. And I thought, I'm a biochemist, I don't need analytical.
Nice.
And getting over to working there, I just had to, after work I wanted to know what was going on there, so mm-hmm. I'd have to go back at my house and just research this. I don't know, what is the GC? What does the GC do? And how do I prep samples for it? What can I run on this column, this detector, and all that stuff? And I feel like it helped me build skills so that wherever I go, I'll be able to just smoothly start working and applying what I know to those jobs.
Mm. That's interesting that you say that, right? The quote unquote the real world, right?
Mm-hmm.
I think everybody has to go through that. Everybody has to face that at one point or another, right?
Yeah.
Sometimes reality just smacks you in the face, right? Like I've talked about mm-hmm. this on the podcast through myself, right? There's instances in life where I was just kind of getting by, doing the bare minimum, you know, mostly focusing on having a good time or having fun, and then all of a sudden it's like I hit my rock bottom, and it's like, oh yeah. Welcome to real life now. Like classes in session, take a seat, right? And you're just like there, and it's a moment of like vulnerability and like real fear, right? Where it hits you where you're just like, what am I gonna do if I just wanna give up right now? Because at this point it's not an option, but I might wanna consider looking into that more than actually just trying, because everything just hits you at once and you're like, this is so difficult. Like the amount of attention, the time of energy, like everything I'm going to have to put into whatever I'm doing right now just to make this work. I mean, it might still fail, is just like unfathomable. And you just literally just want to throw in the towel, right? And that's interesting that you bring that up. That's the real world, which I think we actually bring up pretty often on this podcast. We try to talk about, you know, like growing up, developing yourself into a better person. Like that's really what it is. It's the real world. Mm-hmm. If you're living in La La Land, if you're living up in the clouds, like, hey, good for you, you know, like, but at some point or another, reality's going to smack you in the face and it's going to hurt, right?
Yeah.
Anything you want to say, Juan?
I was allowing Kevin some thinking space there in case he wanted to add anything. Yeah. I mean.
So you're having like flashbacks right now. You're like, oh God, no, not the real world. Not again.
I'm remembering like exactly the same thing from Kevin, like, you know, leaving college, leaving high school specifically for me, because I mean, I knew how to wash clothes, but that thing that he's saying, like you learn how to wash your own clothes, really simple things of like, how do I do these things so I don't die? And it may sound funny,
exactly,
but it literally is that. No one is going to cook for you. No one is going to, you know, wash your clothes, clean your bed. I don't know, simple things, right? Buy shampoo, buy conditioner, buy all the other stuff. Like, it's really simple stuff. I get it. It's like fucking, it's funny. Like, I'm trying to hold my laughter back, but it's legitimate things.
It is, man. Like,
that when you're with your parents or your guardian or whoever it is, most of the time you don't do any of that. It just happens. You just walk into the bathroom and there's toilet paper in there, right? Someone has to put that toilet paper in there. And all these things you have to learn. Specifically, we learn them in college. But even if you don't go to college, anytime you move out, you have to learn them, right? We learn them through college because we went to college. But us going, because Kevin is from LA and I'm, you know, from Northern California, we had to move out of our places, go to this weird place in the middle, you know, of nowhere, and figure out, like, how do we become someone? How do we, again, just not die, survive, right? There's a reason why people say C's get degrees or D's get degrees. Like, sometimes it's just about survival. Yes, you want to get A's. Yeah, I lived off campus. Yeah, so.
Yeah, you see, you live on campus, you're still a little catered, right? Because you have your room. You have your room and everything, so.
I really wanted that. I felt like left out for a moment. So I actually never lived on campus. I was supposed to my first year, but again, this is all my fault. I didn't apply quick enough. Then I applied and then they were all taken. So I had to live.
There's that too, right? Like,
yeah.
You learn a responsibility for stuff like that. Like, I remember I got smacked with like a $1,500 bill on college because I didn't have insurance in Merced County.
Mm-hmm.
So I got stuck with the UC insurance. And exactly. It's all because I just didn't fill out some forms to get insured in Merced County. And you know, you learn that stuff.
100%. How to apply to scholarships, how to call people, right? I mean, we don't like call people these days. We just like text. We had to like call the office. You had to call financial aid if something broke.
Oh, yeah.
You had to, right? For example, if your internet went out and you had to submit an assignment, what do? Well, you have to figure something out. You run, you know, to your roommate's, you know, room and like, yo, like, I need to use your computer ASAP. Or if you can't, you have to send that email that everyone eventually sends to professor like, oh, I'm so sorry. You know, my internet went out. I couldn't submit it in time, but here it is in this email, and cross your fingers and hope for a day or two whenever they respond, because they always take a stupid amount of time to respond, that they'll be like, oh, it's okay. You know, which again, you face the consequences of everything you do in college. And I'm just going to generalize at this point, just in moving out, because it's the case in college, but it's also the case now that I've like moved out and I already moved out for college, but like paying my own rent, having my own job, not just coming from loans or financial aid, right? Stuff that like the government provides for you, but actually having your job and, you know, having to pay your own bills and all these other things that are super adult things that are not fun. You know?
Yeah. You know, you gotta set your money aside, right? For each little thing, your bills and everything. You just can't spend freely or anything like that.
How to save, right? I mean, that's something that I don't know.
I lost that skill, man. Right now I live with my family. I moved back and it's just like, oh my God. Once I move out, I'm going to suffer.
Yeah. Good luck.
Yeah.
So. Nice. Just like I was like, yeah, good luck.
There's nothing else to say. Yeah.
Luckily, I grew up poor. So like even now, like now that I make money, I see things and I'm like, damn, that's expensive. And I don't buy it, but.
Right.
Not just, like, it's a whole different story now because I make my own money and I don't have to ask my parents.
And you can actually buy it, right?
I could actually buy it. Like, I could afford it, you know, but I just still think, man, it's expensive. It's still stuck in my head.
Yeah. Well, I mean, also considering we live in California, right? Well.
Yeah. And I look at it like a sandwich for $20. Hell no. That's too much, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah.
But in general, I could afford that kind of stuff now, but it's just, I was just raised like that. I'm just like, man, I could get a sandwich for $10. Or I could make my own sandwich for $2.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like in the, our culture generally, like, I mean, you're Guatemalan, right? We're Mexican, but just generally like Latin culture, like I definitely connect with that because we didn't have money growing up. And then when I got to high school, we had even less money. you know, which is hard because like high school is especially the time where everyone, you know, makes fun of you and this thing and that thing, like, oh, where are your new, you know, Fila is your new Nike is like all the kids are trolls. So
back in middle school, I had Skechers still, and it's like, what is that?
What? What are those?
Like, mom, I need Nikes. Are they gonna be
literally? So that's what I'm talking about, right? I mean, growing up like that, then it does make things easier. Like what you're saying, like it's difficult, like paying your own bills and having your own job. But I agree. I've never had more money in my life. And I'm not saying like I'm wealthy. It's just you come from such lows that any sort of wealth that you build after college, after, you know, high school, whatever it is, and you have a job, you're like, ooh, now I have money. Right. Yeah. I remember one of my first purchases when I got to college and there was $4,000 in my account because I had gotten a scholarship. Was like 4 bags of Cocoa Crisps, literally. Oh, yeah. That was my first purchase today. Mm-hmm. And my roommate looked at me like I was crazy, but I was still a kid. I still think even in college, I don't think that's you're really an adult until you're like 22, I think. 23, yeah. 22. You know, after you're already like old enough to drink, whether you drink or don't drink, you just have to get through that threshold, you know, and then I think after that point, you sort of like, all right, I'm an adult. I know how to do things. Let's figure out where we go from here.
Yeah. I mean, I had a slightly different experience. I mean, my family is definitely broke when I was younger. But the weird thing is, like, I was put into the workforce very early. So, like, we were broke, but I also had more money than, like, most kids at that time, you know? Yep. And I could definitely see like how that it changed me, you know. It made me walk differently. I carried myself differently because when I walked to the lunch line, I knew I was going to be able to buy something if I wanted it, right? Because I had that option. And I think that's the thing that people don't understand when they come from a financial background or their family's financial background that's, you know, good, is that you don't have to worry about what you can't buy. You don't have to worry of showing up to a place and being like, damn, like I only got like 10 bucks in my pocket. I need like, you know, some money for the bus, right? Like people literally just walk by and just carry themselves so differently without even having to worry about their options or consider them, right? But when you're poor, or perhaps, you know, you're a student in college, or you're just kind of going through it in life, you will reach those points where you have to really consider your options and even consider if you have that option, right? Like you could literally be at a fast food restaurant and be looking at the menu and then you're like, realize like, oh wait, I don't even think I have any money. And then you check your wallet and it's like, yeah, you don't. And then it's like, you'll have to walk the walk of shame. Right. And that's something that people don't understand.
Back in middle school, one of the best things was like when me and all my friends would pitch in a dollar and get a Little Caesars pizza for all of us, you know? And, soda. Yeah, we're all really poor, but, you know, together.
Together.
For that pizza.
Yeah, broke together.
Yeah.
Did you guys ever do this where, like, you would get a Little Caesars pizza, but then you'd split the slices into even thinner slices?
There weren't that many of us. It was like 4 of us.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I used to do that a few times. It's like, when it would get to the point where it's like we were that broke.
Mm-hmm.
What was that?
That's all. I told you why it was gonna happen.
Yeah, bro, you really are hot out there. You got the alarm going up. No, just like there's times where like we'd have to split the slices into even thinner slices because we were like that short on money, but there was like so many of us and we're like so hungry. It's like that's literally what I think of, like when people say like, oh yeah, man, I'm kind of broke right now. It's like, did you ever have to split a Little Caesar slice into another slice? like how broke we talking here, you know?
That's like, fair. Yeah.
Yeah. That's funny too, because I mean, both you and Juan are in that situation, right? Where it's like you come out of college, you came out of that experience of like having to like just survive. Right. And now it's like, you've been fortunate enough to be granted a career that now opens so many doors for you, right? Like, how does that feel for you guys? Where it's like, now you have these options. Like, as if if before you had to like think of it in the sense of like, yeah, that'll never happen to me, or like I wouldn't even start trying to think about what that would be like. Right now it's like you really can have these options that you didn't before. Like what does that feel like when it hits you, right?
It feels great. You know, you get to buy things that you want, the shoes that you want, the clothes that you want. And it's a big difference from when you were in college, when you're just like budgeting everything.
Yeah.
Because if you didn't work, you didn't get like any scholarships, you're just falling on financial aid, whatever's left over. And you know, you got your rent to pay, your bills to pay, your books to buy. So you end up with very little money. And just it's so hard to live like that.
Yeah,
super hard. That budgeting thing is the same. Like every semester you get a certain amount, unless you have a job on campus or somewhere else, you have to spread that money through an entire semester. So
yeah, I remember
go ahead.
Oh yeah, like right at the beginning of the semester when everyone gets their financial aid check, that's when everyone's like happy and going out, buying food,
parties,
and stuff like that.
Drinks.
Yeah. And then it gets to the end of the semester and people are just buying like Costco hot dogs.
100%. $1.50.
Or even worse, you know, they go over there and they get pulled off of samples.
Yeah, 100%. People eating like ramen, like... There were actually times where I didn't eat some days where I was like, all right, I need to stretch out this food. Like, legitimately, not that it's like, not to like, you know, no sob story. It's just like, damn, okay, well, I don't have enough food. I have to just, or maybe you just have to wait until this point where a loan kicks in or something else where you get more food or no more food, more money to buy more food. But you have to stretch out the money.
One time when I walked into DC and just grabbed, you know, the pizza slices were just right there, you know?
Yeah.
You grab one, you put on your plate, and I was just walking around the whole DC, eating it, and, you know, just left.
And that, people, is what you call stealing. That is what you call stealing. Yeah. Honestly, yeah. DC, which is, just stands for a dining center at UC Merced, a lot of people would do that just because, I mean, because you're broke, also because it was super easy. Like nobody cared because the workers are also students. So, you know, like they probably just got off like a final or a midterm and they don't care, you know, just like, just give me
finals week, dude. They probably like, man, this kid's like out of money.
And everyone gets it. That's the thing that I loved about college, and that you learn like this suffering wasn't just me and Kevin. It really was like 99% of people, unless you were really wealthy in college, which doesn't happen often unless you're like, you know, in LA, I guess, like UCLA, USC or whatever.
Yeah, USC.
But if you're not, 99% of people are in the exact same struggle as you. So everyone, it's like almost like you don't even have to say things. You know, like, you know what's going on. Like if someone comes in, sometimes Kevin would come in with like all these like bags under his eyes. I'm like, midterm? Yeah, midterm.
And like, one of the popular words, man, is just, you don't have to say anything. You just say sane.
Yeah, exactly.
Same. Like, man, I didn't sleep. Same.
Yeah. Always to everything, like, same.
KMS, same.
Same. Oh, so, it was the struggle bus for sure. But it's something different about going through it, like, with friends. And in some way, I feel like they become a little bit like family, you know, because, like, it's such an intense struggle. And there's no one else to do that, like, a simple thing, right? You go to the dining center. And someone's like, hey, man, I got you. You're like, damn, for real? Like, my heart, dude. Like, thank you. Like, it means that much because you know that everyone is in the same position. Maybe someone's a little bit better off, a little bit less off. Either way, in the spectrum, it's so short in terms of, like, even if you're in the best position, you're not in a good position. So, for sure, it's a struggle, but it's good to have people there along with you.
I'm also curious to, like, how realistic is it to have a job while you're at college? Because it seems like you wouldn't have the time.
Kevin?
It's hard. I tried. I worked in the DC for like a few months as a dishwasher, but I would just get like the worst schedules. I would get like a schedule from like 6 to closing. And so I had 730 classes that semester. So I'll work from 6 to 12 a.m. Then I'll finally, like, because the parking lot was so far, so I'll get back to the parking lot, like, I don't know, like 15 minutes later at 12:15, I'll drive home, get there like at close to 1, eat something, and then I'll start my homework. And then I'll finish like at 3 a.m. and then wake up at 6 or 7 the next morning to go to class. No stuff.
Damn. And,
I didn't sleep very much at all. It was pretty funny because one of my friends, he still, like, to this day reminds me of that, of a day that, because we had a club on campus that year, of like a guitar club, and he always reminds me how one time I just like came in like all slouchy and like walking like a zombie, and he just thought it was like the funniest scene ever. And it's like, nah, dude, I was suffering.
I didn't sleep. It's like while you were laughing at me, I was actually suffering.
Yeah.
Damn. And I know you didn't stay in that too long, right?
No, I quit, man. I was like, hell no, this is not the life. I remember the weekend I decided to quit was when my parents came over because they were gonna go to the Bay Area for some event,
mm-hmm.
and they were like, oh, we're gonna go to Merced. You drive us over there. In my car.
So I remember that, yeah.
My place. And and then I got out of the DC from work. I did some homework and I took a shower, and then it was already like 4 a.m. and they're supposed to get there at 5 a.m. And I was just like, whatever, I'm not even getting to sleep. I'm just going to watch YouTube videos for now. And from there, I picked them up. I drove straight to Sacramento first to meet up with some family. And I honestly, I don't even know how I got to Sacramento, man. I was so tired that, like I don't even remember the freeway getting there. So I was like, nah, this is not it. Like,
I remember you got some energy drinks.
Like this all the time.
You got some energy drinks, right?
Yeah, I just teleported, man.
That's so scary.
I remember
when you're like that tired and you literally have chunks of your timeline missing. Like, yeah. I had instances like that back in the day. I mean, I've had some like that recently, but they haven't been as bad. But I do remember where you'd be driving somewhere and it's like you just kind of like you're existing but you're not really conscious, and literally mm-hmm. it feels like you teleport. You'll be leaving your house, yeah. and next thing you know, like, you're arriving at an airport to pick somebody up, and you're just like, when you're stopping, it's like the first stop you've made the whole time that you're driving, and then you just kind of like look away from the steering wheel like, oh damn, like, I'm here already. And you're just like checking your phone, you're like, oh shit, like, what the hell's going on, when you're mm-hmm. that tired and you're like, have no, you have no comfort in your life. There's no extra 5 minutes of sleep. There's no, oh, let me get that extra last little bite. There's none of that. It's like you're literally getting by like your tank is on E, your life mm-hmm. tank, if you will.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah,
it's a struggle bus. But moving on, after college, right, now that we're thankfully in better positions, for the most part, what are your goals now? What do you, I mean, you're an analytical chemist. You live in LA.
Yeah.
Let's say, give us the next year to 5 years of what you're trying to do.
So, you know, that's what I'm still like pondering about, right? Cause I definitely don't want to stay with just being an analytical chemist. First off, like, it's great and all, but it gets pretty boring. I can't decide. I've taken like a few courses to be able to apply for a clinical lab scientist position. So it's just like a 2 years master program, man. It's kind of the job role is kind of like an analytical chemist, but for more the health side, right? So you just like analyze tissue samples, blood samples, and everything for whatever it could be, like a virus or cancer, stuff like that. So I'm interested in that, but I kind of like what some of my coworkers do, you know, the ones with PhDs, and I do like doing research at my lab too. So I've been interested in that as well, in terms of my career. So yeah, I'm very conflicted at the moment. I still get to decide. I have probably until spring, because spring is when applications start opening up. So that's career-wise.
What about personal-wise?
Personal-wise, I don't know. I've been in LA for like 2 years, right? There's like tons of things to do here. I finally started doing something. Like, I started playing soccer again.
So that's
a nice thing to have. One of my high school teammates like hit me up out of nowhere. He's like, hey, we need to call you. I was like, all right. back in.
Hell yeah.
Nice.
And that's like a whole a nice thing I do nowadays. But yeah, I just start doing stuff like that, like being more out there. It's pretty, I feel like it's very important, because the alternative is just like work home, and that eventually gets tiring after a while. So yeah, just looking at the clubs and stuff like that.
100%. That's pretty cool. You also are someone who invests, right? In the stonks.
Oh, yeah. I don't even look at that anymore, man. I turn off my notifications for Robinhood and Coinbase and all that stuff.
The market has definitely gone down.
Negativity.
Yeah. The market has gone down. It's also an opportunity. But something that me and you have spoken about, and also Omar and Ja and I spoke about previous episode, was real estate and potentially diving into that. And I know that you've been talking about that, not just with us, but it seems like also by yourself and with your parents.
Yeah. Real estate is very important, right? It's like one of those things whenever it comes to like food, housing, and like health. Those are things that would always bring in, that would always be business in, right? So I'm very interested in real estate, because especially places like here in LA, you see how some of these houses like sell, like, I mean, I'm exaggerating here, but like they sell for like a quarter in the 60s, right? And then all of a sudden they're worth like 2 million. I see that all the time in Santa Monica. You see all these old people just sitting on the porch, just chilling, like it's easy for them because they bought that house for like, I don't know, maybe at the time it was a lot of money, but they buy it for like 40 grand, now it's worth like 2 million. And it's just a small, like, two-bedroom house, you know, but it's just like, it's in Santa Monica, so it's expensive.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And, it comes to show that investing in real estate is like one of the good places to go.
And what's what got you interested in real estate? Was it like a certain thing that you read somewhere, or what turned on that light bulb for you of like wanting to get to real estate?
It was that, just seeing how the housing values generally go up, even in the small town that we went to our college with, houses there were worth like around $200,000 when I first started. And now they're at $400,000-$500,000.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, literally it went up just because of the university, you know. It's not a town that people say, well, I want to move there. There's movies, there's all this stuff there.
But yeah,
it's just the university, and that brought up the value up.
Interesting. Yeah, I mean, I remember there was a situation where I think I might have told Juan this. I might have mentioned it on the podcast. I don't remember, but I had, because I have family in Texas. And so obviously going from California to Texas, there's a huge price change in the housing market, and just anything in general, right? And I was with my uncle, and we're just kind of cruising around, and he was showing me around, and this is specifically in El Paso. And I asked him, like, yeah, so like, what are like the prices down here? And he just kind of smirked and he chuckled, you know, and he's like, it's like, oh, you'll never guess. And we're driving through a very high end residential area. And I'm like, I mean, these houses must be like a few million dollars each. Like, these are crazy properties. And he tells me, like, oh, no, like, these are like 500,000 at the most. I'm like, what? And I'm like, that's insane, right? And that's kind of what piqued my interest there, where I was like, well, that's it right there. If I can find a way to buy one of these houses and sell for the prices that they sell in California, I'll be rich, right? Like, that's, I found the formula, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but things are changing, aren't they? Because that was how it went. Like, you have these places that were kind of underappreciated, or people didn't really go to because it's not like, it's not LA, it's not San Francisco, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But nowadays, since you could work from home, you know, you have all these people from these big cities that are moving to small towns because their houses are so affordable for them. And it's just changing the housing market everywhere.
Right.
100%. And even though I really want to, I feel like when I get a good idea or something like, oh, I want to invest in real estate, I'm just like, let's do it now. But like right now is like the worst time as well for that same exact reason.
Interest rate is like, what is it right now?
Interest rate is high, and year over year, like houses are up like 14% from last year, like literally.
Right. And spaces you don't think so, right? Because of, like I said, like work from home.
Mm-hmm.
You have like the desert cities here near LA, like Palmdale and what is it, Victorville, stuff like that. That houses are just skyrocketing because all of the people from LA can live there cheap because they don't need to live here in LA anymore since they can work from home.
100%.
Yeah. Well, that's like the crazy thing too. Like that's happened with LA. That's why like LA has grown so much.
Yeah, and I look at it, I'm like, no, I'm not gonna pay $700,000 to live in a freaking desert.
100%. Same thing has happened in Tucson and Arizona, and especially like in Austin. So you may want to check as well. I don't know how it is in El Paso, but all of Texas and Florida and states where, you know, usually you can find cheaper housing now have gone up for that same reason. Because like, I do have a remote job, so I am one of those people that can do it. And so I'm definitely honestly looking to do it. So I don't see why anyone else wouldn't, you know, that has that opportunity at least.
Yeah. And it's interesting too, because for us, right, we're part of a generation where we have that mentality, right? You go to school, you get your education, or for my case, you know, I go into the workforce, you find yourself a good opportunity, a good job opportunity, you get yourself into a good career, and you just grind your ass off so you can get some money and invest into some sort of property, right? But we're talking about this very early in our, you know, lifespan. Like, people from the previous age, like our parents, like, that was their life goal, right? Like, there was no talk about buying multiple properties. There's no conversations of like, where are we going to invest our money? It was literally like grind, have a family, and hope that you can save up enough money when you're in your 40s and 50s to just invest it all into a house. And that's where you're going to live for the rest of your life. And that's that, right? Mm-hmm. And that's also fascinating thinking about that, where, again, we're of the next generation. We're thinking about innovation. We're thinking about being better than our parents, right? And trying to improve upon what they ingrained in us. And here we are. How can we invest? How can we get some sort of a real estate property? How can we rent it out? Or how can we get it for a better price? Like, these are conversations that I personally never had with my parents when I was younger. Now I'm trying to like really squeeze it out of them. It's like, what can you teach me? What can you tell me, right? Of when, from your experience of when you guys bought your house and all that, right? And it's important to have these conversations, right? Because it ingrains that in you.
Yeah, because I mean, you know, even them, they, you know, as the older they get, the more they mature, right? The more they see things. Right now, my parents, their main like lesson for me in terms of like housing and stuff like that is to try to buy property of my own, because them, we've been living in LA our whole lives, right? So they've been renting since they got here, and they say like, think of all that money that's been going to rent, and for what? Like, we don't have anything, right? Because we've been renting out. So what they want me to do is to look into owning property. So instead of paying rent for no reason, or just like for month to month, you pay your mortgage for eventually owning a house.
Yeah, right. Or the alternative, which was what I was telling you guys, like, you put the deposit down, you get the house, but then you rent it out. And so now, instead of you paying the mortgage, someone is paying that mortgage. If there's a little bit extra, then you know what? You have a little bit of a side income that's coming in. Or if it just covers the mortgage on its own, that's fine. Someone is paying your mortgage, and it's still your house. And when or if they move out, or when the house is paid off, you just got a free house for the most part, right? Yeah. Application fees, probably deposit, you know, down payment, that whole sort of stuff. Okay, you can put that in. But
or even then,
otherwise, you get it free.
If you don't want to keep the house and the price go up, you know, you make some money from there.
That's what I'm saying.
You sell it.
Yeah, well, that's what my parents had done when I was younger. They had purchased the house that we live in now. But they did it with the intention of someday moving here. But at the time, my dad had a job that essentially gave us a property to live at while he was working for this company. He was in the management or whatever, so that was part of his contract that he had. And it was a beautiful property, so there's no reason for us to leave. It was free too. Again, it was part of his contract. So at the time, what my parents had done is they purchased this property, and that was the exact same mindset that Juan's saying, is they purchased it and they immediately started renting it out. And at this point, I don't quite remember for how many years it did that, but it was a good amount of time where that definitely helped pay the bills at the time. If anything, like Juan was saying, you broke even, right? You didn't necessarily make any profit at the time, but you also didn't owe anything, and you were already in the process of paying off this property. And then, you know, a few years later, my dad got sick, and unfortunately, he was no longer able to to actually work. So we had that other house that we were living at taken away from us. But in that scenario, we just moved into the house that they had purchased, right? There wasn't any worry of like, where are we going to move to? It was more so as like, how quick can we get those people out of there that are renting so that we can move into our own home, right? And that's another side to real estate and to investing is it doesn't always have to be just about the profit. It doesn't always just have to be about the losses, right? Think about the actual stability that it's adding to your life. If you're in that scenario, like Juan, where you're working remotely and right now he has the ability to travel and to go, you know, essentially live anywhere really and work from home. And he makes an investment right now into one of the states where things are really cheap, but he doesn't necessarily want to live there because he wants to continue to travel. Okay, fine. But what if someday something happens to, you know, this country, we get put into a recession, right? Then what are you going to do, right? If everybody's kind of struggling, there's like, we're in chaos and you can't find anywhere to rent or anything. You might have to move back home with your family, but hey, guess what? What happened to that one property that you had purchased that you were paying off? Like you might not be able to say like it's fully yours just yet. You might still have to make payments on it, but at the very least now you can move back into that property and you don't have to, you know, go through the struggle of worrying where you're going to be sleeping tonight because you have something there, right? It's like another safety net that you can add to your life. So there's also that aspect that comes into play.
True. Facts.
I'm going to kick out the people renting your house once.
I'm going to kick them out.
Sorry, man.
Yeah. You got to be careful people who that, you rent it to. But yeah.
Yeah, people that rent do have, they do have rights.
Exactly.
That's the other thing that's kind of tricky is trying to navigate through all of that.
Especially in California.
Yeah, my parents went through a whole hell dealing with people where they were trying to, you know, you give them a hand and they were trying to take the whole arm with them. And then there's like lawsuits and stuff that get involved. It's a whole shit show. And so it's like you really got to read up on what rights people have as renters. That's why sometimes it's better to do a contract, you know, like a just a lease, you know, for a year or whatever. And you know, Juan has experience with that, right? Where it's like, once that contract's over, it's like you could renew, but at the same time, it's like, if the owner doesn't, you know, want to offer it, it's like, you're out, you're done. Yeah. That's it. Exactly. Right. Yep. It's fascinating. I really enjoy talking about this stuff too, because as a little kid, I used to always see the adults. I always used to hear other people talking about this stuff and I always be like, oh, I want to be part of the conversation. And nobody would ever include me. They'd be like, hey, you're too young. You're too young. Settle down, young one. Like someday you'll be old enough for these conversations. And my whole life I was like, when is it going to be time? Like I want to have those conversations. And then, you know, fast forward to now, like here we are talking about this stuff. And I love this, you know, because this is our future, right?
Sure. 100%. I think that's a good place to wrap it up probably. Do we have a WoW set up, Homer, or we do not?
I do not, but,
Wow.
So we do this little thing where we call it the words of wisdom.
Oh, right.
I just chose to go with the acronym because I like acronyms for some reason. They're kind of sexy, you know? So yeah, we call it the WoW.
I don't know about sexy.
Make one up on the spot, man.
I was going to ask you, Kevin. Is there any like, put you on the spot. Is there any like specific message that you want to give to anybody that might be in a similar place, that you were in school perhaps, or a little bit later on in life, making that transition into the real world? Any, tip or life advice that you want to give to the listeners out there?
I guess is that, nothing good is easy. You know, you got to work for everything and, it may seem difficult, but in the end, once you get your things in order and everything's working well, you will be thankful for those times that you didn't give up.
Damn. It's actually really good. Yeah. I feel like you have that written down there. You just made that up.
Oh, yeah, I prepped it.
it's pretty awesome. Good. Nothing good there's in like life is easy. I like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, and then all of a sudden, like, we just see, like, some teleprompter, some guy, like, holding up a sign, just kind of walking behind it.
It's right here on my head. It's just something my mom has always told me.
Yeah.
So, that's ingrained.
That's beautiful, man. Well, thank you for sharing the WoW with us. All right. Yeah, I mean, I think anybody could take something from that. And thanks again for coming on the podcast. Really appreciate you making the time for that.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
Absolutely. 100%. Hope to have you back soon. Thanks to everybody that's listening. As always, don't forget to check us out on YouTube, Spotify, Anchor, Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, all the other streaming platforms, and check us out on Instagram for all updates regarding the podcast, as well as other content. If you guys like, make sure to share, subscribe with your friends, show us some love, some comments, hit our DMs, slide in there, give us some feedback, all that good stuff. Thanks again, everybody. Cool. And that's the show.
See ya.